For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Good evening, everyone. So we have been talking about the teachings of Hongzhe, our early 12th century great master, Zaodong or Soto Zen, and looking at teachings from his practice instructions for now in cultivating the empty field. I want to talk this evening about the ancestors. Can you all hear me okay in class? Okay. So Hongzhe refers to the ancestors very often in his practice instructions. And what he means by the ancestors, first of all, are the ancestors in the Zen, Soto Zen lineage. So, Shakyamuni, Bodhidharma, Bhaktachan, the sixth ancestor, Hongzhe himself, Dogen later, Shinryu Suzuki. There's this lineage that we chant, and maybe we'll chant the formal Zen lineage sometime later in the practice period. But there's a wider meaning to the ancestors that includes many kinds of ancestors, all archetypic ancestors, cultural ancestors, ancestors in the arts and music. At any rate, I want to read some of what Hongzhe has to say and then talk about the future. So, Hongzhe says, those who produce descendants are called ancestors. Where the stream emerges is called the source. After beholding the source and recognizing the ancestors, before your awareness can disperse, be steadfast. Do not follow birth and death or past condition. If you do not succumb, then all beings will show the whole picture. So, you know, he's talking here about the ancestors and the source, and one way to see this in this context is Shakyamuni as the source of Buddhism, at least in our era. But there's something deeper here. The source is always here. It's not limited to historical sources. What are the ancestors who keep this going? So we had Buddha's birthday celebrated yesterday, and that's a day when all Buddhas were born. And so this process of the ancestors is something that is alive. The ancestors are not dead. They're part of our practice. So, Hongzhe says, if you do not succumb, then all beings will show the whole picture. Wake up, and in turn, the ground, the roots, the dust, and the dust are clearly cast off. Although empty of desires with deliberations cut off, transcendent comprehension is not all sealed up. Perfect, bright understanding is carefree amid 10,000 images and cannot be confused. So this bright understanding, this source, and the ancestors, we don't have to make this some somber event. They're carefree amid all the 10,000 images, all the aspects of our life, and cannot be confused. Within each dust mote, Hongzhe continues, is vast abundance. In 100,000 samadhis, all gates are majestic, all dharmas are fulfilled. So in all meditations, all the teachings are fulfilled. Still, you must gather them together and bring them within. So our practice and our study are all to bring this back home to us, and also make it real. Still, you must gather them together and bring them within to reach the time-honored return to the source and serve the ancestors. Join together into unity. Scrutinize yourself and go on. So Hongzhi talks about serving the ancestors. How do we take care of this practice so as to continue it, to serve the ancestors, to continue their great work, their great Buddha work in our lives and in our world. So just a couple more of conscious references to the ancestors. He says, all beings are your ancestors. Fully appreciate the emptiness of all dharmas, of all phenomena. Then all minds are free and all dust evaporate in the original brilliance shining everywhere. All minds are free, all dust evaporate in the original fundamental brilliance shining everywhere. Transforming according to circumstances, meet all beings as your ancestors. This is a kind of radical thing to say in the context of the Zen tradition and veneration of the ancestors that was part of Chinese Buddhism, not just in Zen. All beings are your ancestors. So this is also about the dependent co-arising, that we are all deeply, deeply connected, not the otherwise. The Tibetans say that everybody you meet was in some past life your mother. All beings are your ancestors. So our connections with spouses or partners, with children, with parents, continue in the next lifetime, in two lifetimes. I just was watching some version of Buddhist craftsmanship in Japan, where they said that teachers and students are connected for three lifetimes, very deeply. So Hongzhi says, transforming according to circumstances, that is, meet all the situations and difficulties of the world, all the circumstances. Meet all beings as your ancestors. Subtly illuminate all conditions, magnanimous beyond all duality. So our practice is not just to find the source, though that's part of it, turning within to see the universal ultimate reality shining everywhere right now here, but also subtly illuminate all conditions, bring us into our everyday activity, magnanimous beyond all duality, clear and desireless, Hongzhi continues, the wind in the pines and the moon in the water are content in their elements, without minds interacting, wind and pines, or moon and water do not impede one another. Essentially, you exist inside emptiness and have the capacity to respond outwardly without being annoyed. Like spring blossoming as it's beginning now, activating now in Chicago, like a mirror reflecting forms amid all these, the noise, spontaneously emerge transcendent. So serving the ancestors is to not be distracted and not to succumb to all the noise of the world, the airplane flying overhead, going to or from O'Hare, all the noise in your mind when your monkey mind starts rolling around. Lots of feelings coming and going. Amid all the noise, just emerge. Go beyond. So I want to read a bit of one other passage, one of the many other passages from Hongzhe about the ancestors. This one, he doesn't mention the ancestors, but he talks about time. So this is also about time, about the reaches of time. So Hongzhe lived in the 1100s. Bodhidharma was in the 600s. Shakyamuni Buddha lived in northeast India about 2,500 years ago. We don't know exactly. But yeah, the ancestors represent and offer us a wide view of time. A view of, you might call it history or history, a view of the ranges of time. And they're all right here. We are impacted by all of them, and we impact all of them. So this is all, this is about the past and the future in the present. So there's a section of the practices, discussions, instructions from Hongzhe about dragon meditation. I translated this as Naga meditation, because technically it's Naga, that the dragons in India were slightly different species or subspecies from the ones in China and Japan. Anyway, I'll read a part of this. The clouds embrace the mountain with its autumn colors. Whether jet black or lush green, the profound depths have great spirit. The inherently illuminated original root is not constrained by the branches and leaves. This is the time and place to leap beyond the 10,000 emotional entanglements of innumerable ages. So we all, are conditioned by many emotional entanglements. 10,000 is a word that means lots and lots and lots. It could be more than 10,000. Anyway, this is the time. This right now here is the time and place to leap beyond the 10,000 emotional entanglements of innumerable kalpas, Hongzhe encourages us. One contemplation of 10,000 years finally goes beyond all the transitory, and you emerge with spontaneity. One contemplation of the 10,000 years finally goes beyond all the transitory, and you emerge. The clouds traveling in the vacant valley are free, but they're moving tranquil. Agreeably enter every sense dust. Don't run away from the things of the world. Just enter into every sensation. Present and settled, while constantly staying in samadhi. So this is the heart of our practice in our tradition. Constantly staying in this awareness of the ultimate, of the universal reality, while agreeably, he says, entering every state. Therefore, we have been told that dragons are always in meditation, never apart from this sublime state. So, what is Hongzhe talking about? How can we see his teachings about the ancestors being here now, and the source being here now, even in the midst of this difficult world? We each have our own conditioning and difficulties and tendencies, which is elsewhere, fabricated into apparent habits. But our world is a difficult world. In Buddhism, it's called the Saha world, the world of endurance. There's a lot for us to endure. And I don't have to spell it all out, but there's this horrible genocide happening in Gaza, where famine is being produced for children, death everywhere, where we know about the climate catastrophes. March was the hottest March in history, and it's been 10 months where that was the hottest. This is, you know, we can feel despair, depressed, hopeless. It's possible to feel that way. It's available. However, the spirit of what Hongzhi is talking about goes beyond that. The future is not set. The future is not certain. So I want to strongly recommend a television show on PBS. The first episode was this past week, so I don't know about the further episodes, but the first episode is very much worth watching. And it's a series called Brief History of the Future. And it's so inspiring. So I want to talk a little bit about that in connection with being aware of the ancestors. And I wrote an essay on our ancestors of the future. It's available on our website. But in this series, this brief history of the future, first of all, it talks about time and how we're caught in time. And the guy he's talking about it, his name is Wallach. Anyway, he's a futurist. He meets with numbers of people, including a native woman, who talks about the native view, the indigenous view of time. And this includes doing everything we do with consideration for seven generations ahead. So probably you've all heard about seven generations. But this woman felt deeply about the need for us to have a wider view of time. But there were examples of many things that are encouraging. He talked to somebody in Morocco who has the largest solar farm in the world. It's not solar panels. It's a big tower with it's molten salt in it. And he said 2 million mirrors. It's in the middle of the desert in southern Morocco. This is happening now. And these mirrors reflect the sunlight to the top of this tower. And it turns a turbine. I'm not sure all the technical aspects of how it works, but it's generating enough electricity to power all the electrical needs of the country, and that's Morocco, but also much more. And this is possible. So this is one example of things that can be done to inspire a healthy future. He also talks to a fisherman in New Haven, originally from Newfoundland, who is doing regenerative farming. He gave up fishing because the fish were dying out. But instead, he's got a kelp farm, and he is growing kelp and using kelp, which has all kinds of uses. It's a very nutritious food, but it also can be used in many other ways to bring nutrition to land plants. So he's farming kelp. Another example is from northeastern India, from where Shakyamuni Buddha was. And you probably have all heard of the Bodhi tree that Shakyamuni Buddha awakened under. That was a ficus tree, a fig tree. And they talked to this fellow in northeastern India who is now growing ficus root bridges. So this is an ancient technology. But ficus roots, it turns out, are very long and very strong. So they're building bridges in that area. One of them is 175 feet long from these long ficus roots. There's one that's 90 feet up above the chasm, 90 feet to the bottom. So the narrator was saying, well, what about concrete bridges? Can't those substitute? And this fellow was talking about how ficus roots last much longer than concrete. And we know this from bridges collapsing in this country, recently in Baltimore. Anyway, so there were many examples of how a positive future is possible. And people are working at that. In Wales, in the United Kingdom, there is now a future generations commission that's part of the government. It's a government ministry, and all decisions have to be made in consultation with these people representing future generations. Imagine if we had representatives of future generations in our Senate, in our House, maybe even on the Supreme Court. So I want to mention that just because this is about serving the ancestors. This is about contemplating the 10,000 years. He also had on this program a section on a cathedral. Actually, it was an Islamic mosque, and I forget what country it was in, but it was built over centuries, so the original people who started it, you know, knew that they would not see a completion. It wouldn't be completed for centuries, and that's true of all the Gothic cathedrals in Europe. So, anyway, I want to mention this show, A Brief History of the Future, because it's about how the ancestors can be working now, how we can be the ancestors of the future. So, this is about time and how we see time, how we understand. Dogen talks about time being, that each of us is being time. That time is not some fixed external container. So, everyone here who has done zazen knows that some 30-minute or 40-minute periods seem to last forever, and we're sure the Do-on is falling asleep. And other so-called 30 or 40-minute periods go by like that, or, you know, maybe several fingersteps. So time is not set. The future is not set. So I'm interested in hearing your questions or responses or perspectives on the ancestors, on time, on the future, the past, and right now. So I can see people on Zoom. I can't see people back in the dark. There's some mediation. You can help me call people. So comments, questions, please feel free. And Simone.
Something that I heard at the beginning and something that you said at the end kind of connected for me, and I wonder, at first I heard Shakyamuni, from whom initiated, started at least in our era, and the at least in our era kind of stayed there for me, and I wondered what would be the conscious manifestation of Buddhism in which other era. That was my thought. And then time, I sometimes wonder if time is just not a very early instrument of that we developed as ego of control in trying to define things, and it's now so embedded into our lives, especially in the past 20, 30 years, where we don't even need to change the clock for the daylight savings, and everything is synchronized with everything else. So we don't even have the flexibility of those 5 minutes and pretend that our clock goes differently from another person's. So I wonder if, that's all. I wonder, is time an early ish ego manifestation of control?
Well, it can be used that way, of course.
Mm.
But our great ancestor Zhaozhou, not exactly in our lineage, but he's in all of our lineages, Zhoushu, said to somebody who's inquiring about time, you are used by the 10 times, or all the times, or time itself. I use time. So how do we use time without being caught by time, without being caught by thinking we have to accord with quarterly profit margins or you know, some other 9 to 5 or whatever? How do we use our time? How do we not waste time? That's the end of the harmony of difference and sameness by Shuto, one of our great ancestors, says don't waste time. And referencing another story, somebody asked my teacher, Rev. Anderson, how do you not waste time? And he said, don't forget the one who's not busy. So we get caught by time and become very busy trying to make sure that everything happens according to the time that we think controls us or that we want to control. So I want to go back, though, to your first question about Buddha's in different times and different eras. And that's just part of our, it's part of our liturgy, it's part of our tradition. We talk about the 7 Buddhas before Buddha.
Mm.
And when we chant the names of the Buddha going up to Dogen and onto the Japanese teachers to Suzuki Roshi and going back to Bodhidharma, we chant first the 7 Buddhas before Buddha. Actually, he's the 7th. And these are in original Buddhism, these are considered Buddhas in other realms before Shakyamuni Buddha. So this is part of our tradition. But even beyond that, in the Flower Ornament Sutra that some of us have been chanting monthly, there are many Buddhas in many world systems. They say that there are Buddhas on the tip of a, there are innumerable Buddhas on the tip of a staff, or on the tip of a blade of grass, or in every atom. So that's a way of seeing reality where we're not limited by the historical Buddha. We're not limited by this time frame of this planet even. Now, you might think that's some kind of science fiction. Okay, you can think that if you want to. But anyway, that's our tradition, that there are Buddhas everywhere and everywhere. And many of them are named Shakyamuni Buddha. Some of them have other names. And since I mentioned the Flower Ornament Sutra reading, excuse me for putting in a plug. Dylan kind of coordinates that. But next month, first Friday morning of the month, Friday evening of the month, 7 to 8:30, we're going to finish the chapter before the final chapter, and we're going to start the final chapter, the entry into the realm of reality, the Divine Rebuke, which is this amazing, it's a kind of a separate sutra about a pilgrim going to see 53, in turn, one after another, 53 different bodhisattvas. So it's just a plug for the Flower Ornament Sutra, which is very important. So sorry, that's a long answer.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Other comments or questions about ancestors, or different perspectives or viewpoints about the ancestors and about time and our time, our difficult time, and the future that, the positive future that many beings are looking for now.